Welcome in the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm here with my co-host, Tony East. We are the hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. On today's podcast, we discuss mainly just like three topics. We open up talking about Bojan Bogdanovic's EuroBasket play. If you don't know what EuroBasket is, it's a FIBA basketball tournament hosted for the 24 European teams. It's kind of like the World Cup, similarly, but just in Europe and just for European basketball. We go in more depth about that, so if you don't know what that is, you'll learn about it when you listen to the beginning of our podcast. Then we move on and discuss the tampering charges. Earlier in the week, the Los Angeles Lakers and Rob Pelinka, the GM, got a $500,000 fine. We discuss that, what it means for the league, where the next steps could be in this tampering case, and more, just like that. And then we ended the podcast talking about our two Pacer lineup art. Tony writes for 8.9 seconds and Indiana Sports coverage. He actually started this week, so congrats to Tony out there on that. So on his Indiana Sports coverage article, he wrote about two Pacer lineups, a No Jefferson unit, and a kind of similar to a Warriors lineup, a death unit. So we discussed those two. And then for my article on IndyCornrows.com, we discussed my two lineups, a small ball kind of unit and a no point guard unit. So that was mainly our podcast. I think you'll really enjoy this one. We are hitting the dog days of summer, but I promise you'll really enjoy this podcast. And I promise as the season gets going, this podcast is going to be a lot of fun, really interesting. You're going to know all your Pacers in-depth stories. Me and Tony will follow every game. We're going to follow every press conference. And we're going to give you everything you need to know about the Pacers throughout the season. So just stick with us through the dog days of summer. And I promise the podcast that was great today will only get better from here. We'll take a quick ad break before we get to the podcast. As always, the presenting sponsor of the Locked On Pacers podcast is SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the number one ticket aggregating site around, at least it is in my book. I've been telling my listeners for a while to use SeatGeek. I've used it twice this summer for Reds tickets and for the Kendrick Lamar concert in Chicago. I've used it in the past for Pacers tickets. It's just an awesome site. Like I said, I've been harping on this every week, but I'm telling you, if you're going to buy tickets to any Pacers game this season, you need to use SeatGeek. It's got this great thing where it adds in the fees already, so you don't get kind of surprised by the ending price. You know what you're paying. It shows you the exact price you're going to pay. No worries that you're going to have some $15 charge at the end of it for convenience fees, basically. And then also, it tells you whether you're getting a good deal on your ticket. So there's this thing called a deal score. You want to get somewhere above 65, 70, kind of a green dot will show up. And if you do, it means you're getting a great price on your tickets. And if you use the promo code LOMBA, you get a discount on your tickets. So remember to use the promo code LOMBA when you use SeatGeek to buy your Pacer tickets this season. Because I know if you're listening to this podcast, you're definitely going to at least one Pacer game this season. And now, back to the podcast.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So right now it's been sort of still a boring offseason for the Pacers. We're kind of hitting again. Like I said, we've lamented this over the past few weeks. We are in the sluggish days of NBA offseason where not much news and any kind of signs of life of basketball catch NBA fans' attention, particularly our attention. And so right now we are being caught basically because of lack of basketball. The EuroBasket has been kind of the main way to feed that hunger for basketball right now for people like me and Tony. And so we've been kind of watching that a little bit. And so a player we've been watching, obviously, because he's a Pacer, is Bojan Bogdanovic. So Bogdanovic is currently playing for Croatia in the EuroBasket League, which is basically like a FIBA European tournament. So there's 24 European teams. They play kind of like a kind of a World Cup style play. And so today Croatia played their third game, but Bogdanovic has looked pretty good in the past two games, and he looked pretty decent today. And so we want to just dig into that because not a lot of Pacer fans have seen Bogdanovic play, basically, unless you watched the Wizards last season or Nets in the past, you wouldn't have seen Bogdanovic. And I'm not sure he's somebody you go out and see. So I just want to start with he put up 20 points, 21 points in the first game and 23 in another game. And so I just want to start off with Tony, what's kind of been your thoughts on watching some of your basket play?
Yeah, it's been cool to see Bogdanovic succeed considering no one really knew what to think about him as he joined the Pacers.
like you said, over 20 points in both of the first two games was really great. But the big part is, too, that he's been kind of the leader of the team because some of their best players aren't in the tournament. So he's been the guy they go to almost every possession on offense to either create something or get a shot up and score, which has been really nice to see. And another thing that he's done better than I would have expected is rebounding. I know he's 6'7", but he's not the most athletic guy ever, but he has 7 rebounds in the first game and 6 in the second game. So that's been encouraging to see as well. So if he can keep an offense moving and grab some boards for the Pacers like he is doing in Eurobasket so far, that'd be something really nice to see.
Yeah, so Twitter, Pacers Twitter, the small circle that it is, has kind of blown up sort of on Bogdanović. It's kind of been like this, wow, he looks really awesome. Hope we can bring that to the pitch type of thing. I think it might be a little overhyped. From what I watched, you know, like European basketball isn't NBA basketball. The players are a lot slower, and Bogdanović has a step ahead on everybody because he's such a good shooter. He's able to pull up on a lot of these kind of not as tall and not as big guys that would be in the NBA. But like you were saying, he has looked decently impressive, and I think at least he could be a decent – he's showing the sign that he'll be decent for the Pacers. I'm not saying he's gonna like – in EuroLeague, he's kind of probably one of the best 20 players in it, if not even higher than that. But in the league, he'll probably fall down to the 100 range, but he still looked really good. And being one of the best 20 players in Europe translates decently well to the NBA. And so I like the way he's been shooting. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. And I've also, I just think the size-wise in Europe seems a little odd.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because like amid the offseason discussions, it's always been like, okay, should he really start or should Glenn Robinson start? And so I think everyone kind of had their expectations tampered for him because people don't even know if he should start yet. So that's why it's been more of a welcome surprise to see him succeed so much in Eurobasket, especially on a not-so-good Croatian team. But another thing he's been doing well is exactly what you want him to do well, which is shoot the three. And in his second game, I forget who it was against, I think it was Romania, he went 3 for 4 from deep, and that's exactly what you want him to do for the Pacers too, just stand behind that line and knock him down. So that's been really good. But like you said, I think Eurobasket's like a step between the NBA and like college or the D-League basically. So not like the perfect place to showcase your skills, but you would expect an NBA player to do well there. So the fact that he is at least encouraging.
Yeah, you should expect an NBA player. You should be able to kind of have your way, at least in the European League. If you're an NBA player, you're one of the best 400 basketball players on the planet. And in Europe, so you should be in the top 1% of the players in EuroLeague. And you can see that because Dario Saric also plays on the Croatia team, and he looks really good. He's one of the, you know, he's an NBA player as well, a really young dude that's going to have a really nice career, I think. So it's been nice to watch him. You talk about Glenn Robinson and Bogdanović. I think that's going to be the biggest kind of question mark all season. It's going to be who wins what spot. I thought it was interesting, though, that Bogdanović at least looks like he's a much better three-point shooter than Robinson. I don't know what your thoughts are, but when just watching, I think Bogdanović is is either a better form or consistent form, something that I've been watching. And I'm like, I trust him to make a three versus I don't know if I trust Robinson to consistently make a three.
Right. Bogdanović has kind of proven over his career that he's a pretty good shooter from deep. I mean, last season with the Wizards, he was a 39% shooter from deep. I mean, that's really nice. It's top 100 players in the NBA, and that's what you want to see, especially for the Pacers who don't really have a lot of shooters outside of Collison, really. Glenn Robinson was about the same percentage last year, but that was his first season really succeeding from there last year, and he just shoots under 2 a game, but Bogdanović shoots almost 5 a game. And the volume shooting thing is just as important when you're trying to draw defenders out on you. You know, like a lot of guys just shoot a lot of them but aren't more than like a 35% shooter, but just the fact that they put them up makes them draw a defender to them, which is pretty important. So that extra 3 or 4 shots from deep a game, especially when you make 40% of them, is really important.
So I want to draw back to how does this translate to the NBA in some sense. So he's, like I said, we kind of beat on the point that he's looked really solid. He's looked like one of the better players in Europe, but the game is different in Europe than it is in the NBA. The size is different. So translation wise, how do you see how he's done over the past week translating into him having a decent year with the Pacers?
Yeah. Well, it does show that if his matchup's worse than him, he'll do well. And kind of shown that his whole career because, you know, he was just like a pretty good player with the Nets. He'd have off games and on games depending on his matchup. And then when he went to the Wizards, he was the sixth man, and he really shined there because his matchup was usually weaker as he was coming off the bench, which does point to perhaps maybe he should take a bench role, but it also shows that he can hang tough with NBA players. I mean, there's quite a few NBA players in Eurobasket. I know not as many on Romania and Montenegro, but
still
enough that you can – there's still enough there that you can say, okay, like, he's doing it against some good players, and I don't really know what the gap between him and Robinson is, but the translation for his skills have at least looked pretty promising. And the fact that he's been able to put it on the floor and create a little bit too has been nice. That's not something I really expected to see as much from him.
So when we talk about exploitation, so I agree with you. So that he's one of those NBA players that is his entire game, the way he plays, is going to be dictated by the matchup he has. So we talked about he's going to probably start at small forward. We might want him to play the small, might want him to play power forward. He could play shooting guard type of thing. So I'm wondering, because he relies so much on the, on that kind of who is guarding him, who he's guarding type of thing, whether he'd be almost better as a bench unit leader than Robinson would be, because off the bench, Bogdanović could probably be a 15 to 20 point scorer because he'd be the best player off the bench. And if he's getting that kind of weaker small forward matchup, he's going to exploit it like crazy. But also, if you move him to power forward, which we'll discuss later, and we're going to discuss some lineups, but when you move him to power forward, he might also be able to exploit, kind of do some of that same thing, exploiting the fact that he's not super fast, but he's faster than his power forwards, and like modern power forwards, at least in the NBA. So I'm just not sure his size translates to that. So from watching the Eurobasket, I've noticed that he's a lot kind of thinner than I thought he was, at least compared to other players in the Eurobasket league right now. But I do think he translates nice to power forward, and I want to know what you think about that.
Yeah, I do think that offensively he'd be fine. You know, the stretch four is kind of a pretty demanded position now in the NBA. So if you were to put him there on offense, I'd be okay with it. And kind of the reason they want to start him is because of that stretchability, like create a bunch of space in the middle of the floor for Oladipo and Turner to really develop their chemistry pick and roll game and just open up the court in the middle for everyone to be able to score more. But on defense, power forward, like you said, he would be thin, and I think anyone could just back him down and take him to the hole and score. I mean, he's already a pretty awful defender, so you don't want him to be defending closer to the basket. That seems like a worse idea. So I don't know what to think about that.
So do you think small forward wise, I think he might get exploited. He'll get exploited defensively, and I'm not sure he's going to have that huge an upper hand on offense, the small forward position, which is why I've always leaned toward Robinson should start. And so I'm kind of leaning towards, because, like, right, the small forward is probably the best position in the league currently, deep-wise. Maybe not in the Eastern Conference per se, but it's general. The best players in the league are all small forwards, and there's just Bogdanović is not on those kind of guys' levels. But I guess it will depend on also the players around him, where if Oladipo can kind of prove himself offensively, he could draw the small forward instead of the shooting guard guarding him. So there's some of that in it. So I think it – with Bogdanović, it's just like we've been beating on it. It just depends who he's guarding and who's guarding him. And so, I mean, I still don't think he should be the smart starting small forward. And I think you agree, you think he should, right?
I do, yeah.
So I think that'll be interesting to see play out throughout the season, because I just think Robinson is more suited defensively to guard small forwards than Bogdanović is.
Yeah, he is. And that's kind of what the small forward is like, you got to guard a three to be a three, and Bogdanović can't guard anybody. That's a shout out to my friend Adam Spinella. But yeah, he can't really guard anybody, so that's kind of worrisome. But he'll have to guard wings, presumably, right? And Oladipo will guard the best wing. So at least that's good for him, as he's guarding the second best wing, and he could probably guard the third best one if Thad Young has an easier matchup, or like, it's a team that plays three wings, so Thad Young doesn't have to play in the post or something like that. So I just think that his, like, okay, the wing starter, the small forward starter is going to be the fourth or fifth option on offense, right, behind Oladipo, yeah. Turner, presumably Collison. So that guy is just a guy who, like, spots up, and that's what Bogdanović is great at, and that's what Robinson's just okay at. So I think it's way better to start Bojan in that role.
Well, it's also just indicative of the whole team that – most teams, so right, we would say at least the best teams in the league, their best player is a small forward. I'm just thinking Spurs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're not getting to the finals without a really good small forward.
Yeah, so
or like just, it's someone indicative. Good off wing, basically.
So it's indicative of how this season might go if Bogdanović, who, like we've been talking about, is just you're just like, you hope he can do well kind of at the division. Like, you know, you're not worried about his offensive game. You're just really worried about defensively. And will he, and I mean, if, you know, one of those better small forwards guards him, he'd probably get shut down too. So I think it's a very indicative of the whole season of what's going to probably happen for the Pacers, which is not going to be a great season for them because they just.
He's 215 pounds and he's 6'8". Like, he is really thin. Defense is tough for him. Even if he can stay with the guy, he's just not big enough.
Yeah, he's just not big. And I don't think – it's just not fast enough. I mean, he just doesn't have the same kind of speed some of the small forwards have in those leagues. Right. I mean, you have to guard a guy like Kawhi or LeBron or KD or Paul George or Gordon Hayward, and those are just some of the guys who have to guard. And he's just not sure he can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the wing rotation kind of shakes out.
Yeah, so let's move on from the Eurobasket, obviously. It turned to a little bit of a more depressing thing towards the end of that. Sorry about that to everybody out there. But this, we beat on it over and over again. This season may not be that great of a season because we lost Paul George, and he was one of our best players. But so speaking of losing Paul George, the Lakers got fined $500,000 earlier this week for the tampering charge. It's just money into a guy like Matt Johnson at Lakers. That's who cares. They have billions of dollars, so it doesn't matter to them. So I'm kind of the fine. I mean, you know, the fine is like a slap on a wrist. It looks like a lot of money to somebody like me and Tony, who have like probably $15 to our name, but to Matt Johnson, it doesn't mean anything. So what were your thoughts on the tampering?
Well, I was shocked that Magic Johnson got a warning and that Pelinka was the guy who really got in trouble. That was kind of shocking to me, especially after the Jimmy Kimmel thing. It seemed like Magic Johnson was the guy under investigation. So the fact that they ended up catching someone else was interesting.
So it was Plinkett got the fine. I thought it was just the organization.
Yeah, well, the organization gets the fine, but according to the NBA statement, it's because of Palinka's actions.
Oh, okay. I did not catch on to.
So he is a former agent turned GM, right? So, like, it makes a lot of sense to me that he's going to know all the schemey little things.
Yeah, like, he became the GM, like, 3 days, in mid-June, maybe?
Yeah.
Or maybe May, early May.
Yeah.
Was. But, like, he was probably still negotiating contracts for other players at that point still.
Right. And that's what Bobby Marks said was the tough part is, like, because Mint, Paul George's agent, is also Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell's agent, it was hard for them to prove that, like, they talked about Paul George. And the fact that they were able to prove it means it was really obvious. Like, that's a pretty big deal to me.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, the fine is a slap on the wrist.
Oh, it totally is. To me,
they were able to prove something, but they clearly don't care.
It's kind of funny to me that it's a stupid kind of punishment to me. It doesn't mean anything. But at the same time, it's the best case scenario for the Pacers, right? Because there's two options. Either A, the Lakers get caught and get in trouble and the Pacers look petty. Or option B is the Lakers don't get caught and the Pacers look petty and stupid. So at least
they look in the middle.
Yeah, so at least in this situation, they only look one of the two negative things about the front office that could happen.
Well, I mean, like we talked about before, if they're serious about enforcing tampering, the Pacers were trying to do was trying to force the issue because, like we said, the balance of power has sort of shifted from the league from, like, small market teams are getting kind of screwed again, where it used to be for a while it was like it didn't matter where you played. But now the Lakers are starting to kind of come back and push their dominance on players. So I think the Pacers were kind of setting out that, hey, we want to see if this can go somewhere. So maybe some of these bigger name teams will stop trying to bully our guys off our roster. Because, I mean, from the outside, you could definitely tell that maybe the Lakers didn't say he wanted to sign you, but Paul George wanted to go there, and there's got to be some kind of there's an understanding, whether it was a verbal or written down understanding, but it was an understanding that Paul George wanted to go there, and they weren't going to trade for him, and that kind of devalued his entire trade market for him. So, I mean, I think I don't know if I would call it petty what the Pacers did. I think it was sort of like trying to see if the league really cared about tampering, and I think they just kind of said, we don't give a bleep about tampering.
To me, it's only petty because it was after he got traded. Like, if it was during the process when he was still on the market, I would totally get it, if that makes sense. But it's over, you know?
It does, but then if you don't trade him, I don't know if you can file tampering until you trade him kind of thing, right? Because, like, if you have he's on your roster still.
I went to find the rule in the CBA. Like, as long as he's under contract and they cannot talk about a future contract with him at all.
I just mean optics-wise. optics wise, does it really make sense to file tampering while he's still on your roster and you're trying to trade him? Like that seems a little weird.
Yeah, that would make no sense. You're right.
That's the only thing. But like I said, I really think this fine is just kind of indicative of the league. Like, I mean, I don't know that tampering should be allowed in the NBA, but they either have to figure out a system where, like, so a lot of it, like, you know, the MLB, for example, when you lose a star player, you get a first round pick back. Like, they got to figure out some kind of compensation if this is a trend, the small market team keeps losing their guys in free agency. Because even with Gordon Hayward, for example, there wasn't probably tampering charges, but there's been an understanding for the past year that Gordon Hayward, Boston would be his number one team probably because of his former coach. So
yeah, everyone knows.
So it's just like, it's how do you, and especially because it's Utah's another small market. How do you help these small markets out?
To me, it's interesting that like any blogger on Twitter can predict where these guys might sign that are superstars just because it's so obvious, you know?
Yeah. Like if we sat down and over the next 2 years, looked at who's going to be a free agent, we could predict where most of the top 15, 20 guys would be. Get most right.
Here's where Hayward's going to end up: the Jazz, the Rockets, the Heat, or the Celtics. And three of those four teams are the only teams that got a meeting with him. Like, it was so easy.
I mean, Kevin Durant was the same way. They were writing articles 2 years ago before he even, like, for even the playoffs that year, that Kevin Durant was going to probably, that the Warriors were going to be on Kevin Durant's radar. They were going to try to go after him. And that was probably going to happen if they didn't win. So, I mean, it's just,
It is a tough situation. But at least for the Pacers, it kind of ends up in the best situation. And something that I think is interesting is that since Pelinka got the fine, I'm doing air quotes, but you can't tell, and Magic Johnson got a warning, it's interesting that they went straight to the fine for Pelinka and no warning, right? Because he just got the job. So that means he had to do something pretty severe. And it means that if Magic Johnson does do something, even if it's minor in the future, he'll get slapped with a pretty big punishment because he got a warning already.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this could be the start of sort of like, if you're a repeat offender of tampering, you get a bigger fine or bigger issue, because I'd imagine that a lot of players are going to start wanting to play for the Lakers again if they get good. A lot of the stars, there's a lot of star players from Los Angeles. Magic Johnson's a really big name in the league. There's going to be lots of players that say, hey, I want to go to LA because I'm going to be in the limelight. I want to play for a guy like Magic who I think understands the game and whatever. And so how does Magic Johnson handle himself? Because he's such a big celebrity. He probably sees these players. He said on Kimmel, he probably goes vacation and would see Paul George or see another NBA player. I mean, another one like Russell Westbrook. Like, he would see some of those guys, and he can't talk about them coming to the Lakers, but he can't talk to them about like their family. So it's interesting to see, because if I imagine Matt Johnson has to toe that line really, really like lightly. And if he crosses it again, or I guess he didn't cross it this time, but if he comes close to crossing it again, it could be more punishment. It's going to be kind of hard. And it probably lead to, I imagine, the next CBA, some kind of revised tampering rule.
Right. It's funny that right after a new CBA comes out, they have to enforce this the new tampering rule right away. The fine could have been up to like $5 million, I think. I went and looked for it. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, but you got to think, it's got to be the Lakers picking up the tab on that one, right? If Pelinka pays the fine, but if the Lakers write him a check to pay the fine.
Yeah, and half of the fine goes to the Players Association and half goes to the Players Association charity.
Okay, I mean, like, it's not like a terrible fine.
Yeah, yeah, right. Decent. Exactly. Huh. So, $250,000 to charity. All right, good for Paul George for tampering.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like when the brawl happened in 2004, all the money those players lost went to some charity, and they had like a big thing about it, made a big thing about it. Ron Artest, like, whole salary went to charity. I mean, like, you know, the NBA doesn't just pocket the money. Like, I'm not saying that. I'm just,
right.
So, I mean, Lizzie did that. So I just think the tampering rule has to be find and enforced, and you have to just discuss whether players can tamper or not, because players talk to each other and recruit players, but that's not tampering. There just has to be, they have to kind of set a line and set what means what. And if you're caught, you either get this, you know, I'm not sure if fine is kind of a disincentive enough. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of these guys look at the fine and look at it as a joke. For like a first round pick, people will be more serious about.
Yeah, well,
when they don't tamper.
I think what I saw, I don't remember if I got this exactly right, but I think the only way they take away draft picks from you is if you agree, like on a, an act, like
Like, I think if they just say, hey, you want to come to the Lakers next year? Like, that won't get you to remove a draft pick. But if they say, hey, do you want to come to the Lakers next year for this much money on this many years? Then it becomes a draft pick thing. So from the punishment, you can kind of tell what the discussions between Vince and Pelinka were, but you don't know for sure.
Yeah, there was one in the past. I am completely blanking on it. I think it was in Minnesota, was it, where there actually was written down, we're going to sign you for this whatever contract.
Yeah, I do remember that. What was that?
So, let's see.
I don't remember that either. Doesn't matter.
It's the Joe Smith tampering charge.
That's right. It is Joe Smith.
He agreed to a contract like before he even left, and they lost. I think they lost a first round pick for it. So I mean that was a big deal. And so I mean, other part of this tampering thing, like when players take discounts, like Dirk Nowitzki's, you know, he's taking so much less money because on the back end he's going to get some kind of deal from the ownership when he's retired. Is that tampering? Yeah. You know, what is? That's a kind of way to manipulate salary cap too. So it's just kind of. It's a very gray area, and it's even popping up in the NFL. I mean, kind of this manipulating the salary cap kind of thing. So I just think in the next CBA, if this keeps happening, which I imagine is going to keep happening, because I don't see a GM saying, oh God, I have to pay it. My team has to pay a fine, but we get like, we don't, but I can get Paul George. I can get a superstar on my roster. Who cares kind of thing, especially in the big markets. So I think in the next CBA, there'll be some.
I tweeted that
more
like
fine rules.
To me, $500,000 to know if you're going to get a superstar next year is absolutely worth it.
Yeah, it's the tax of doing business. I mean,
why not do that? Yeah.
You get Paul George, you're going to make ridiculous amounts more money, especially in Los Angeles, by selling tickets. I mean, if Paul George signs in the next season and he's the only one that signs, let's say, they're going to sell out. They'll sell out.
Yeah. Well, say I'm the Dallas Mavericks. Like, I'm a pretty big market team, but I don't know if he's coming to me. Like, I'm going to pay $500,000 to know that. Like, why not? That's a great idea.
Yeah, because these teams are all worth $1 billion. They all make hundreds of millions of dollars. Like $500,000 is pennies to them.
It was you who said that they should take that number off their salary cap, right?
I don't think I said that, but I'll take credit for it.
Oh, all right. Well, you said it, and we'll start it on this podcast. But that to me is a good idea.
So what's that? Take it off the salary cap.
So the Lakers have a $500,000 fine. So now their salary cap is $500,000 lower than every other team's to sign players.
That's not enough though. I think if you could, that could be a way. So a first round pick, you say you lose $10 million of salary cap room.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
something to make team building harder for you since you're cheating in that facet of the sport.
Yeah, no. If let's say the league said you lost $5 million in salary cap room, they'd probably be able to sign Paul George and LeBron James next summer.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be a good punishment. That'd be funny.
Yeah. I mean, I think when Paul George signs there next year, I wonder if there'll be a big hoopla or not about it.
No, everyone knows.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember Paul George in his Oklahoma City said, well, if I had a good year, I'm not going to leave. Like,
yeah,
he's leaving. And so, he's leaving in 5 minutes.
He might be the first guy to sign next year.
I mean, I think there's a chance that if Oklahoma City stinks, he just gets traded to Lakers for like pennies, just so Oklahoma
or like can recoup Jordan something.
Yeah. Yeah, or what, Lakers have what? The Contavious Caldwell Pope.
Yeah, exactly.
Expiring, right? You could just do that. And then to something, like an easy little flip, because they just get him on the roster for a few months to build him in.
Yeah, that's
and they, then they have his bird rights, which he might like better. They have his bird rights.
5-year deal. 8% raises instead of 5.
Oklahoma City is not going to make, is like bottom end playoffs. They know they're not going to win the championship. They might just be like, all right, we'll trade Paul George for just to recoup something back.
Well, that's the other thing for the Lakers is they don't have their own pick. So like, why not have Paul George now? You're not tanking.
Yeah. No, they're not going to tank.
So who knows?
And yeah, it's
the subject kind of worn itself out, but it may not. You know that Peter Vecsey guy, the guy who Vecsey, I don't know how to say his name. He reported the first story about the tampering. He apparently reported this week that Herb Simon is like pissed off at this decision at only a $500,000 fine and might sue the NBA.
Oh, that would be really funny.
I didn't read the story because it costs $5, but I want to know.
Yeah, I'm not getting past his paywall either. But,
I know. I feel bad. I just am poor. Anyway, yeah, it sounds interesting. That could be quite the story.
So maybe the topic has more legs to it.
I mean, people are already saying on Twitter, like, the Pacers are a sorry organization for all this. So I kind of hope it stops now.
Yeah. Reminds me of the Flaygate with the Colts.
Kind of.
Except the thing is, if you were any of the other franchises, you'd be doing the exact same thing.
I'd like to think.
I mean, at least any of those small market teams, you know, you'd be pissed if you lost to, like, the way the Paul George trade happened. I mean, he lost his entire trade value just plummeted in like 5 days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I'm sure like the Grizzlies and the Pelicans are like, yeah, small market, stand up.
Well, how about this? When like the Bucks, so the Bucks, let's say in 5 years, Giannis leaves and he goes to New York because he's something, I don't know, and you're manipulated. You tell me the Bucks aren't going to throw a hissy fit about that too.
Yeah.
Like they would. So, I mean, it does seem a little sore loserish. I agree. But if you're in their shoes, you're going to do whatever you can because you got screwed out of one of the best players in the league because he knew he was going to LA and the Lakers were devaluing the market for him. Or at least it's Paul George's agent that did most of the devaluing of the trade market. But
yeah, I kind of get that. Like, you want your team to be better, but that sucks. It just sucks.
It just does. All right, so let's move on from Paul George. You know, we've beat him to death these last 3 weeks. We'll keep probably talking about him. Hopefully we'll stop when the season starts because
they'll be not our team anymore. Soon. Less than 30 days.
Getting close, right? Till the preseason, right? I think I saw it was like 35. No, not 35. It's like 41 days to the start of the season.
The regular season, yes.
I think at this point.
Something like that. 27 plus 17, 44, 43.
44.
Yeah.
Four. Well, I'm getting excited for that, and I know you are too. So the past couple of days, Tony and I wrote some competing articles, actually, on some Pacer lines. Not really competing articles. That's the wrong way to put it. But articles with the same kind of topic. So we both put together basically two lineups. He wrote his for Indiana sports coverage, which he's now running for. So you can congrats Tony on that. He's all over the place. You'll see him everywhere. He did basically a no Jefferson bench unit lineup and then a death lineup, kind of similar to the Warriors. So we're just going to discuss that. So I wanted to start with the no Jefferson bench unit. So do you want to take it away, Tony, and explain what your thought process here was?
Yeah, so my whole point of writing my lineups piece was I want to get Al Jefferson out of the game as much as possible. And I know the easy solution is just plug in TJ Leaf because he is probably better than Al Jefferson just because everyone's better than Al Jefferson at this point. But TJ Leaf's going to be pretty bad too. So my first idea was kind of go a little more small ball-y and play Corey Joseph at the two. And I looked into Corey Joseph last year, and he played 43% of his time not at the point guard position, which was really interesting to see. And when he played with Kyle Lowry, they were really good together. They had a net rating of almost 5. Like, I mean, I know Collison's not as good as Lowry, but he kind of has a similar play style of, like, a quick guy who can shoot from deep. So, to me, if Joseph can play on the wing with Collison and then you slide Sabonis to the 5 and have, like, either any combination of Stevenson, Robinson, and Bogdanović as your forwards, that's a pretty good lineup to me.
So is this sort of the concept of you replace a 5 with a 2 kind of sense?
Yeah, or a basically the 5 with a wing. And I know Sabonis is like, it's not weird to see him at the 5, but he didn't play 5 a lot last year. So it's a challenge for him to get him to the 5, but at least you're getting a better wing in there than Al Jefferson. Like, I'd rather see Corey Joseph play out of position than see Al Jefferson at all, you know?
So the only problem I have with this lineup is if Joe Young has to play, because do we think Joe Young is better than Al Jefferson? That's kind of what you're trading off.
I said Collison, but the point is it's kind of a bench group, and you'd have to kind of play Joe Young if you want to play Joseph, because Collison would be playing the whole game if not.
Yeah, you can't play Collison for a full quarter. He's 30 years old.
Yeah, Joe Young's not very good. I don't know if I'd rather play Joe Young or Al Jefferson at this point. That's a good question. I don't know. I really don't know. I would probably say Jefferson, but barely.
See, I would maybe say Young just because he's younger, just because I'm thinking of, like, Jefferson can't move on defense sometimes. But I do like the idea of a Bogdanović-Sabonis kind of 4-5 a little bit, just because, like we were talking about earlier, I think Bogdanović off the like on a bench unit can dominate at times offensively, at least, because he is a better offensive play. He has the offensive talent of a starter, but the defensive talent of a bench player, right? That's the best way to put it for him.
Yeah, I agree.
So I do like that. You know, you texted me the Corey Joseph stat when you read his article, and I was kind of shocked that he played that many minutes at the two. But I mean, I guess when I think about it, didn't watch a ton of Raptors basketball last year. I watched them play the Pacers a couple years ago. I'd watched them on Nash TV and stuff like that. And so it does make sense a little bit, because if I remember right, Joseph would play a lot of units with Lowry, and Joseph was a pretty decent like 3-point shooter, and he was really good at kind of spotting up and shooting threes at times, as like kind of just being the guy that stands at the top of the key as the play develops. Yeah. So that makes sense of him playing the two in some sense. And so I do like this unit. I think you got to figure out the point guard a little bit better. I mean, if you trust Joe Young, this lineup is probably going to see this lineup. I just don't know if McMillan trusts Joe Young to be a starting point guard for more than 2 minutes of garbage time.
Yeah, I chose Stevenson Bogdanović because it's kind of like you take out Robinson and you go with this as like your bench unit if Robinson does start. And then Stevenson's kind of like your spark at the three. And then I like the idea of a Bogdanović Sabonis pick and pop too. So I just thought there'd be a lot of space. And in that regard, you wouldn't even need Joe Young to ever touch the ball, but he's really bad on defense, like unbelievably bad. So I don't know if you could get him in there or not. That'd be a tough decision.
Yeah. I guess then if you're playing Joe Young at kind of the two, then you're basically playing Joseph as your point guard again. So that's
really good. Yeah, that is true. That would be bad.
I mean, that's the only thing. So, I mean, I do – if the Pacers had that third point guard, like just kind of like – I'm thinking like in the old days of like Donald Sloan. It wasn't great, but like, you know, could be a point guard for 5 minutes kind of player. They had that kind of guy as their third point guard. He might not be – this lineup could work really well, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. You can't play Collison the whole game. I don't think Young's so bad. Like he's really nice on offense, but until he proves anything on defense, will be tough to see this one. It's closer between Joe Young and Al Jefferson than people think.
Yeah, so
if it gets to the point where you'd rather play Young than Jefferson, I think you got to go for it.
Yeah, I mean Young is younger. To be funny, Joe Young is younger.
Years, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, and he's faster. I mean Jefferson's just kind of.
Right. So your first group that you went with was a small ball group with Turner, Bogdanović, Stevenson, Depot, and Collison. And your kind of theme was getting Lance Stevenson more minutes. Is that what I'm reading?
Yeah. So I'm still holding out hope of a 2013 Lance resurrection. Now we're reaching 4 years past that almost. So the hope is dwindling. It's out there and it's slowly fading away. But I was just trying to think more of a three guard lineup in sense. So like I kind of compared it to Jeff Hornacek's first year with the Suns when he started to play that Dragic Bledsoe Isaiah Thomas lineup, which like nobody would have thought to play, right? If you're sitting, right. The Suns going to season had like 20 wins projected. Nobody would have thought to play all three of those guys at one time. And it was pretty successful because it was just like, you had so many guys with good ball handling skills and be able to get in around the rim and all kinds of it just worked. It was really successful. And so I was trying to think of a way to do that. So I thought just putting Stevenson at small forward might be the best way to do that. I could be convinced into moving Oladipo to small forward and then putting Corey Joseph at the shooting guard in some sense. But I think the core of it, you still want Bogdanović, Turner, Depot, and Collison out there, all four of those guys, because they're the four best 3-point shooters on the team. And they can spread the floor, and you can play kind of an up-tempo speed when you have those four guys on the floor. And then, you know, if you put Robinson, then you're just back to a normal lineup. I was just trying to think of a unique way to get kind of like throw a team off their balance. You know, if you're going against a team and it's kind of things aren't working out, so you're down to under 10 points, and it's a regular season game, you're trying to throw them off their kind of groove. So
yeah, and it could be like your first sub in a way where Lance is your sixth man coming right in for Thad. And there is reason to believe that Lance will be 2013 Lance. I mean, he was good in the playoffs. That him and Serafin group was really funny and entertaining, at least. So at least it'll be fun to watch him.
Yeah, Lance has spurts. So like 2013 Lance was like solid for like 25 minutes a game. I'm thinking if you get like 15 good minutes out of Lance a game, you'd be okay. Like you don't need him to put up 30 points, but if he puts up 12 points and 7 rebounds and 3 or 4 assists, that's a decent night for him. And he could do that in 15 minutes. He's that kind of.
Yeah, and I do agree this three-guard lineup would work really well, especially with Turner and Bogdanović. They'd have a ton of room to work in the lane.
Yeah, and I think I think it'd be really interesting. Just you could definitely, what you could do is you could plant Collison and Bogdanović in the corners, and then you could you could almost make Oladipo kind of bring it up. I mean, that's kind of part of an next lineup, but, or you could plant Turner by that much in the corners and have Collison bring it up and kind of have like Stevenson and Oladipo cut around and move around. And it's, you know, you have a lot of like driving kicks kind of moves to get those guys open threes. Cause I think the key this lineup, a lot of it would be to get Bogdanović in the corner for an open three.
Yeah. Or like, if you have Turner in the short corner, you could do like a flare screen for Bogdanović to get him in the corner. Like, there's a lot of options with just how everyone, because everyone's kind of mobile in this group too, which is nice. I think it would work. Yeah.
It's like better than my quicker lineup.
Sure.
Yeah. And so then your next lineup was, you kind of compared it to the death lineup, right? So your next lineup was Collison at point guard, Oladipo at shooting guard, Robinson at small forward, Bogdanović at power forward, and Thad Young at center. All this lineup was to figure out a lineup without Turner, right?
So it was like, it wasn't that it would be like Turner's going to sit at some point, right? So this group is just to get as many good players on the court when Turner's out of the game. And like, the Warriors have succeeded with this bring in a wing for their center for sub thing and then have Draymond play center. So it's kind of like that. And the whole reason Thad would play is because he's a pretty good rebounder, even for his size and mobility. So you'd kind of just have him be the only guy who'd get rebounds, even though it appears Bogdanović and Eurobasket's better at that than I thought. But, you know, you kind of have Thad clean up the mess and just plot around from like 15 feet away and spot up for mid-rangers while everyone else just runs around like crazy on fast breaks and tries to score 10,000 points because they're going to stop absolutely nobody.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Thad at center, actually. I think Thad has got the size to kind of play the center. He's not going to be a rim protector, but he can certainly hold his own for a few minutes down there.
I agree, but he's really rarely played there in his career.
I mean, I'm thinking back to the Pacers with David West, and that's what I kind of imagine where Thaddeus Young is, kind of a similar player to West in a sense. West was a better player, I think, overall, but they have kind of some of the same skill sets of jump shooting, but can, like, are decent defenders because they're tougher guys. They're bigger guys that know how to, like, they can take a body to the, they come to them when they go to the rim, like.
Right.
And so, I mean, the only, like I said, the only problem with Thaddeus playing center is you don't have Miles Turner in, but like you also said, Turner's got to sit probably between 10 and 15 minutes a game at least. I do like, it's just like an interesting lineup for sure. I mean, I know I put Bogdanović as power forward in my last lineup too. And after watching him in Europe, I'm not sure he can play power forward in some sense, just because of his size.
I put him at the forward both of my lineups, so I'm hoping he can do it.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I hope he do it. It's slowly starting to fade that I think he can do it. But I guess the thing will be, can Robinson do it? Maybe, you know, one of those two guys can try to play power forward would be good for the Pacers, because they just don't really have a backup power forward. They have Sabonis, I guess, but Sabonis could also play center. And I don't know how much minutes Sabonis is going to get this season too. So,
and Leaf probably won't play.
Yeah, like Leaf is obviously should be the backup power forward eventually, but he's not going to start. He's not going to play all game 50. So we've talked about that. So
your last group was a no point guard group with Stevenson, of course, because that was your theme.
Yes. Love Lance.
So just Glenn Robinson, Thad, Miles Turner, Stevenson, and then Oladipo at the one instead of anyone that they already have.
Yeah, so I think Oladipo, I mean, obviously, if Oladipo was a good enough ball handler, he'd be a point guard in the NBA because he's got the size. So clearly, he's not that great of a ball handler. I think we've all seen the videos of him making mistakes, having a guy open and just not making the right pass or whatever. But if he could, he's still improving. If he gets some of his playmaking and some of his control ball handling under control, he could be a decent point guard, and he could lead this really solid unit, because I think Oladipo might be the most dynamic scorer on the Pacers. And Stevenson has kind of the same. Stevenson has showed times that he could be point guard. I mean, I think we all agree that the 15 minutes that we thought Lance was going to be the starting point guard was going to be really fun, but also really bad for the win record of the Pacers. But, you know, it's just a fun lineup to watch. I mean, I think Stevenson and Oladipo are the two, skill set-wise. Like, they both bring a sort of kind of skill sets that just nobody else in the Pacer has, with the drive, being able to get to the rim, being able to kind of keep defenders on a dime, pick and roll type of plays. I mean, making the pass that nobody thought they're going to make, finding, you know, squeezing in these ridiculous kind of passes or shooting shots to kind of pulling up on guys. Like, so any lineup that Oladipo, you can get on, anytime you get Oladipo and Stevenson out there, I think it'll be fun to watch. it might lead to 35 turnovers, but it'd be fun to watch.
Yeah, I know a lot of media guys killed the Thunder for not using Oladipo as the backup point guard last year because he's at least okay at it. And I think also, you know, if Stevenson turns out to be great, then this is it. But if you put in Bogdanović for Stevenson, this is like the best five players on the team to me, which is always, your best five players is never a bad idea.
Yeah, we were talking about that, right? We were talking about if you just had the best five Pacer players, so you think Stevenson would be like eight, right?
Yeah, I put him lower than most people. I would say Turner, Oladipo, Thaddeus, Bogdanović, Robinson would be my five. And then Collison over Robinson, and then Robinson six. Maybe Stevenson seven. Maybe Sabonis seven. I don't know.
Yeah, see, I think when I did it, I had him about six. So I had him ahead of all the point guards, basically. But then I had Robinson ahead of him.
Oh, I put Corey Joseph ahead of him, too.
See, I don't know if I put Collison Joseph ahead of Stevenson, just talent-wise. I think
I put Collison. I think Collison's going to be good. I think kind of set up to be good, right? Like, no one has any expectations for him at this point, so.
Yeah, I think I still have a biased view of Collison just because I remember him from 2011 and how just – he just couldn't
put it
for the Pacers.
He had the dominant charge with the Pacers, which was bad.
Yeah. So
typical Pacers fashion.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think a lot of my opinion is still skewed because, like I said, I've seen Lance at his best. And when Lance at his best, it was awesome.
Awesome.
So
I think Lance is one of the best two or three defenders on the team.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think my best defender, Glenn Robinson –
Turner.
There, I guess. Turner. Oh, yeah, Turner. Duh. I'm sorry. Of course, Turner's the best defender because Turner's rim protecting is beyond ridiculous.
It's pretty good. It'll be even better next year. I put him one. And then, Robinson and Stevenson are my 2-3 probably.
Yeah. So maybe there is some optimism to end this podcast on. A little bit of like, Turner defense should get better next year. They do have some decent defenders. Like, Stevenson is a pretty decent defender, an above average defender in the league probably. So maybe and Robinson probably could be too.
And Thad Young
maybe
is
they
average.
Can pull something together.
Yeah.
So there's a lineup. Like I said,
I'll do
you have to find a balance
for you guys.
Yeah. Well, they just have to find that balance of trying to score 110 points or trying to hold their team under 90, holding their team under 90.
Right.
They should kind of strike that. And that's really going to be between the Robinson, Bogdanović, Stevenson, Collison, who they kind of – those kind of moves, what happens there, how they figure out which one they're relying on more.
Yeah, it'll be tough. That's for sure.
And it will lie a lot on Nate McMillan.
Oh, God. Well, we've beaten him to death just like Paul George with our opinions on him.
I just wanted to see what your reaction was. And I said McMillan's name, and I got exactly what I expected.
No more Nate McMillan talk. What do you
All right.
You
So I haven't really thought of what I'm working on this week. It's been a long Labor Day weekend. I just got back to school. So I was leaning towards doing another lineup thing. I've done lineups about 2 weeks in a row now. I was thinking about doing some defensive lineups. That's kind of where I am. I might do, because of Eurobasket, a little bit right about Bogdanović, but I don't really know where I'm at yet. So you'll have to stay tuned for the rest of the week to figure out what I write, but I'll have a column up probably by Friday. So what are you writing about?
I don't know either. I might stand out for Bojan and say why I think he should start because I love him now apparently, but I don't really know. Pacers wise, I don't really know yet. We'll see. Should be a fun week though. I think things will start to get rolling because I know most teams have to report back to their cities after Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, I think also there could be, I might have to read the Peter Vesey article, figure out how to break that firewall and talk about the ownership stuff. That could be a good one, but you can tell we're hitting the dog days and the end of summer because the topics are dwindling every week.
Yeah. Hopefully something happens. We keep saying that every week. They still only have 17 technical guys coming to training camp, and they can get up to 20, so we'll see.
As our audience out there, once the season gets going, it's going to be a great podcast because we are going – we will watch every game. We will follow probably every practice, every press conference. We will be in tune to everything, and we will break it all down, and it will be a lot of fun because we'll make – when the season starts, it will be a lot of fun because it's a whole new team that, like, we've never seen before. It's gonna be a whole different style of play, and it'll be really fun kind of to discuss once things really get going.
It'll be fun to watch the new era.
Yes, So we'll end it on that. Thanks for joining me today, Tony. And thanks for listening to this Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, we are brought to you by SeatGeek. Use the promo code LOMBA to get a discount on tickets from SeatGeek. SeatGeek is one of the best ticket aggregating sites around for sports and concert tickets and more. There'll be a podcast up again next Monday. We will be back on Mondays again. We took after this Monday off Labor Day, but we'll be back on Mondays. And once the season starts, there'll be even more podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. For now, thank you for listening to this podcast.
Rush into Old Navy today for up to 50% off store-wide. Get dresses from $15 for women, $12 for girls. Plus, one day only, tomorrow, take 50% off all Old Navy active at Old Navy and Old Navy.com. Valid 10/16 to 10/20, select styles only. Active offer 10/20, excludes in-store clearance.